All right, I want to be respectful of your time, so we're going to go ahead and get started. That didn't have the gong effect. All right, I thought I'd introduce myself and explain what we are and are not going to cover in this session, because I want to make sure our expectations are set appropriately on both sides. Internet browsers are almost a matter of religion for some people. I realize that you may have preferences on either side. You may have a preference for a browser other than Internet Explorer, and that's fine. I'm not here to sell you on Internet Explorer. I'm not here to proselytize. I'm not here to market or evangelize. I'm just here to talk about Internet Explorer 10 administration. Now, if you want to catch me after the session, I was in Las Vegas at MMS, and a couple guys caught me in a bar, and we talked about Chrome versus IE versus Firefox for about 2 hours. So I'm happy to have that conversation with you, but out of respect for everybody's time, I really want to focus today's conversation on IE10 administration, because there is a lot to cover. I assume if you're in the room, regardless of your personal preference, you have something to do with Internet Explorer. So the good news is I want to make your job a little bit easier and give you some information that you may have had, but maybe you didn't use, or maybe you didn't know. So we're going to be covering a lot of content, a lot of material. I do have some demos that I'd like to show. And we're going to keep this keep it moving pretty quickly. Another thing I wanted to say was, in an audience of this size, in a theater this dark, I may not be able to see you, even if you're waving at me madly. I may not be able to see you. I can see you. Hi. If you don't mind, come up to one of the microphones and ask a question. I don't mind if you ask a question during the session, I'll take questions at the end as well, and I can stay as late as you like to talk about this or anything. But I do want to be respectful of everybody's time, and I'm going to be keeping us on track. I started out at Microsoft about 10 years ago giving technical presentations, and it's not very often that I actually finish over. I want to be respectful of your time and make sure we finish on time. So a little bit about myself. I have an IT pro background. I was an IT pro and a consultant, mostly an infrastructure consultant, from about 1990 to 2003 when I joined Microsoft as a TechNet presenter. I was a technical evangelist for about 4 years. I joined the Windows Phone team, did product planning for Windows Phone, and I joined the Internet Explorer marketing team about a year ago. Now, I used to think marketing was a four-letter word, but I've come to appreciate it. And I think helping bridge the gap between engineering and you guys, frankly, our customers and partners, is a really critical role. So I value our time here today. If this is valuable for you as well, if at the end of the session you think that it was time well spent, please let me know. Please let me know either way, frankly. But I get to do more of these if it's valuable for you guys, so I do want to know that. All right, what we're going to be covering here today is customizing the browser. I'm going to be talking about deploying IE10, and I'll show you a couple of tips and tricks there. We'll go into some detail on browser management, how you can find, with about 1,500 group policies, how do you find and how do you execute those group policies? I can make it a little bit easier for you there. And then app compat, and I want to be crystal clear on this. I don't have a developer background. The last time I did any development work was 4GL, so long ago I don't want to think about it. This is app compat for IT pros. There are other sessions, and I'll cover this at the end, or you can look in the guide. There are other sessions on application compatibility. I think Chris Jackson is doing a session well worth attending. And those are the sessions more for developers. This is what you can do for app compat without cracking the website open. And I think that's valuable for a lot of us, like myself, who may not want to open up that legacy website or may not be able to open up that third-party web app. There's also something I wanted to explain before we kick this off, because I think there's a lot of confusion about Internet Explorer 10's two experiences. And I wanted to explain that because I think that sets the context for a lot of the rest of this discussion. Internet Explorer 10 is one browser with two experiences, or two front ends, you might think of it. On Windows 8, we have an immersive, touch-friendly browser, standards-based. By default, it runs in a more secure mode called Enhanced Protected Mode. By default, it runs 64-bit, and it doesn't allow other plugins. So with that, we wanted to take the web forward. You know, there's a natural tension there between wanting to support newer standards, wanting to create a more immersive browser, a more secure browser, wanting to create a browser that really lights up on some of the new touch devices, whether it's a tablet or even a laptop that has touch screen. And at the same time, we didn't want to break the web for everybody else. So Internet Explorer 10 has both experiences. We have the immersive, touch-friendly browser. As I said before, 64-bit by default, enhanced protected mode, you know, has a lot of goodness there. And then we have the legacy desktop experience. We have the traditional browsing experience, which by default in IE10 runs 32 bits. It will run your ActiveX extensions, your plugins, and hopefully doesn't break the web for everybody else. So that's how we address that natural tension between wanting to be backward compatible and at the same time wanting to take the web forward. There's one other thing I should mention too. Both of those run on the same iExplorer.exe executable. They both run the same binary. So they're both running the same process. They're both using the same DOM engine. They're both interpreting markup the same way. So it really is one application that just has two front ends. Now, there's a third experience that Internet Explorer 10 lights up on Windows 8. Does anyone think of this offhand? It's apps. Any Windows Store app that uses HTML or JavaScript is actually using Internet Explorer 10. So the performance there is very, very app-like. I promised no marketing, but the performance is there to be able to support Windows 8 apps and Windows Store apps. So that's why I wanted to explain both of these experiences running from the same executable, running from the same, you know, Internet Explorer 10. All right, let's dive into customizing the browser. I just wanted to list here some typical browser customizations. You know, you can read this for yourself, but you know, customizing the connection settings may be particularly useful in an area where you may want to customize the web browser for machines that aren't even domain joined. You can create a configuration file and you can customize the settings on a browser for a machine that somebody brings in from home. So some of this can be very, very useful. You can also customize the browser to add ActiveX components or other third-party components. You can add your favorites, you can add help links, and so on and so forth. And I'll walk through this in some detail during the demo. By the way, I have very few slides, but we're going to spend a lot of time in the demo. So hopefully that's okay with you guys. The easiest way to customize Internet Explorer is by using the administration kit. This basically has a wizard in it that can be used to customize Internet Explorer for Windows 8, 64 or 32, or Windows 7, 64 or 32. And let's go ahead and show you what this is like. All right, I always like to explain my demo environment, so you know there's no smoke and mirrors up here. It's very straightforward. I built all these demos and all these decks myself. I have a Windows Server 2012 Essentials machine, and I also have a Windows 8 client against it, and they're both running within Hyper-V, and this is actually my production machine at Microsoft, so it's not even a special demo machine. I'm just running on Hyper-V on my laptop. I'm going full screen on the Windows 8 client, and we'll use the IE administration kit, IEAK, on the Windows 8 client here. So let's go ahead and kick that off. By the way, my next slide shows this, but this is available in a number of different languages, 24 languages, I think, and the IEAK, although it's only available in 24 languages, can create packages for just about any Windows language. So really, it's your preference. You can go to ieak.microsoft.com and it'll forward you to the right place to download this, by the way. That's in my resources slide at the end. All right, so first step is, where do we want the builds to reside? Destination folder. If I go into advanced options, I can tell it to check for the latest components. It'll check with the cloud, basically, and make sure that it has the latest components to build these packages. I can also import settings from a previous version. If I've already been creating IEAK builds, and I may want to create different builds for each flavor, Windows 8.64, Windows 8.32, Windows 7.64, Windows 7.32, I may have four different builds, and I can customize the wizard based on my latest settings. So here's where I get to choose which package to create. It does drop these into a subfolder. You saw that I'm actually creating these within build/teched, and then underneath teched, it will have a separate folder for each of these. It's really just asking, what do I want to customize right now? Which particular flavor? And let's go ahead and create one for Windows 8.64. I have a choice of target language. And now I can choose to create a full installation package or just a settings file. Of course, Windows 8 includes Internet Explorer. Internet Explorer is a part of Windows. So if I'm deploying this out to Windows 8 systems, I may not want to include, or I may not need to include, the full package. If I am deploying it out to Windows 7, I may want to include the full package because those Windows 7 users may still be on IE8 or IE9. In this case, I'm going to choose configuration only for Windows 8. Now we can choose what pieces we want to customize. I've highlighted everything, but obviously you can choose just a subset of this depending on your needs. It's worth going through it all just once to see what everything is. I can synchronize and make sure I've got the latest bits on my local machine. I synchronized it just after lunch, so we should be good. Now I have some control over the user's experience during startup. I can choose an interactive installation where the user actually sees the dialog boxes. I can choose a hands-free installation. Hands-free will actually show the user the dialog boxes, if there are any, but there's no interaction. So it kind of is user entertainment. We're doing something with your machine. Please be patient, that kind of thing. And then there's a completely silent installation. You can also choose restart options. The defaults prompts for restart after installation. You can choose to not restart or to force a restart after the installation. Now, this is somewhat dependent on what you're actually installing. If you're upgrading from IE9 to IE10, it's going to force you to reboot. It's going to ask you to reboot. If you are installing some ActiveX components, it may ask you to reboot. If you're installing third-party software, it may ask you to reboot. But this is kind of, IEAK will take best effort to make sure that, in this case, it won't restart and it won't, force the user to do anything. You can customize the title bar. This is the title bar for the Internet, so it would say Internet Explorer, Internet Explorer provided by and the third party. And by the way, this is a good time to mention there are actually two licenses associated with the IEAK. One is an external license, and one is an internal license. The external license would be used by partners like Yahoo, AOL, who want to be able to create their own package that includes their toolbars, their customizations. You can also use the internal one for most corporate uses. It would be the internal license. Even if you're, this is regardless of distribution. So in other words, you can still distribute this to your customers and partners, but it would be, for internal use for your company or external use for customers and partners, who aren't related to your company. You can also customize the additional buttons. You can add buttons, remove buttons, and so on. Search providers. Now, this is where running it on a local client counts, because if I'm running it on a local client, I can get my favorites the way I want, I can get my search providers the way I want, I can add search providers to my local clients, and then when I import, those search providers show up. So if I'm customizing this for, you know, Russia or another market, I might import local search providers and then click the import button to bring those in. Homepage, we can customize the homepage. We can add multiple homepages. And also, it's important to note, retain previous homepage. If we're upgrading their browser, it will add these homepages to their existing homepage. And this is somewhat confusing for some users. If you've already set Bing or Google or another homepage, and then it adds Bing or Google as another home page, users sometimes get confused by that. So if you've decided on a corporate standard, you may want to make sure this is deselected, so it does not retain previous home pages. Accelerators, importing or adding particular accelerators, just like we can add ActiveX controls and things a little bit later. This is where we can customize the favorites bar, RSS feeds. We can import, we can also manually add URLs right here or add folders. We can move them up or move them down, so you can choose the sort order of those favorites. Options for managing these items. Do you want to add them to their existing favorites? Do you want to only delete the items that you created previously? Do you not want to delete any items? And then you can choose whether or not to delete the Microsoft defaults that are already there. First run wizard. I'm not going to go through these in a lot of detail because you can do this on your own, but I do want to jump to some places where I can add value in particular, because there are some gotchas here that I want to bring to your attention. You can choose whether to run in IE10 standards mode, which is the default, or to run all websites in compatibility view mode. And I'll explain what that is in the last section of this session when we talk about app compat. You can also import current connection settings from this machine. This is useful if you want to deploy these builds to machines which aren't part of your network. Maybe you can't control through group policy. This could be useful for getting those connection policies, or getting those connection settings, rather, out to those machines. Here's one of the gotchas I mentioned, and I wanted to go through this in a little bit of detail. You can, of course, automatically detect configuration settings. You can also use automatic configuration, which means I can create a share. In this case, I've got a share on my virtual server that I showed that is ieconfig that contains the connection settings. And if I do a new build using the IEAK, I can simply drop those connection settings onto that share, and all of the machines that have been told to reference that share will get their connection settings from the share automatically. So this, again, is a nice way of managing those devices, whether you're in a managed environment or an unmanaged environment. You can still use this kind of mechanism. Now, how many people use automatic configuration? Can I get a show of hands? There's maybe 5, 6, 7 of you. So I think it's worthwhile to show you some gotchas here, because there are a couple of gotchas. If you read the documentation carefully, you'll find how to do this, but I thought I'd save you some steps and just show you, because it's not that difficult. If you're using automatic configuration, one gotcha is if you have automatically detect configuration settings checked, just like this, the automatic configuration tends not to work. So that's one gotcha right there. If you do choose to use this mechanism, make sure that automatically detect configuration settings is not checked. The next gotcha is a little more subtle, and to do this, we have to go into the registry. So we actually have a registry entry that you have to create in order to use this feature. And this is where it gets tricky. This is why I called this a 300 level course, because you know, once we start making registry entries, it gets a little technical. If you go into HKLM, software, Microsoft, Internet Explorer, if you look at the bottom here, it's this, this path. HK local machine, software, Microsoft, Internet Explorer, main feature control. Within feature control, there's a whole host of features that are lit up because depending on the setting in this registry. Now, in order to get this to work, we had to use, we had to create the feature branding iExplorer. Here it is. Auto-config branding. So in order to do that, I had to go into feature control, right-click, choose new key, and I had to tell it to create one that said feature auto-config branding. And then within that key, I had to create a D-word that was iExplore, and I had to set the value of that D-word to 1. That basically says it's okay for iExplore.exe to be automatically updated by these INS scripts. So that's the big gotcha, and I think that's why quite a few of us never use this feature. I set it up at a couple of client sites, but this wasn't something I widely used when I was consulting, you know, 10 years ago and more. Automatically configure every, by setting it to 0 minutes, I'm essentially telling it every time somebody starts up Internet Explorer, go check for a new script. You can obviously set this to a bigger number, but I zero makes sense to me, depending on your environment, obviously. And then this would be the URL. In this case, I'm referencing my my virtual server, server one, IE config, and my script is install.ins. All right, I can also tell it to use a proxy. So I can explicitly set a proxy server. I can import security zones. I can modify the settings there. I can import the current program settings or modify them there. And it's worth noting here, IEAK is great for setting these settings, but it doesn't enforce them. I'll say it again. It's great for setting them, but it doesn't actually enforce the settings. You need to use group policy to enforce the settings. If someone were to do an installation, it would import all the settings exactly the way you want. But at that point, the user could overrule those settings or override those settings and go and make changes if they wanted to. All right. And let's go ahead and create the package. All right. Looks like it's there. And it's in builds tech ed. So let's browse out now. It's in C builds tech ed. And notice there's a couple of packages here. One is brand only, one is INS. If I want to leverage the ANS file, I can use the INS file, configuration file, I can use this. And notice there's a 32-bit directory, there's also a 64-bit directory. The one we just created is within the 64-bit directory, and it should have the time and date stamp. Yeah, on this machine it's 1:38 p.m. All right, the other way I can obviously install this is if I go through the brand only. I've got an MSI file and an EXE file. Now, the MSI file is basically a wrapper for the executable. You do need both of them. If I run the MSI file, let's go ahead and run this. Actually, let's just make sure we're doing this right. Okay, my home screen is now set to an internet site. I did ask the developer of this template for permission to use this, and he said that it's a really old template, but that's fine. For new ones, you can go to html5up.net. But let's go ahead and run the script. Notice some user entertainment here. All right. Now, if I start this up, you'll see the same URL, the same website. I actually have to log on, log off, and log back in to see the changes. In this case, I'll show you how to do this a little bit differently in a second. But let me go ahead and just log off, and then log back in. And now it should go to Bing. Okay, actually worked. Yay. All right, now let's go ahead and test that INS file, because I wanted to show you there's, you know, it's really easy to manage IE using this. So if I bounce out here, I'm going to back to C builds tech ed, and I'm going to the INS only one, AMD 64, English US. Here's the install.ins with the associated cab file for branding. So this is a settings-only cab file. What I can do is actually copy these files and drop them on my IE config share. I'm just going to overwrite the files that are already there. I could just delete them, I suppose, but. All right, so these files are now out in this IE config share on my server. And to show you, watch. Notice we still have, well, hang on. Oh, you know why? It actually, it reset itself. I'll explain in a second. Watch. There's Bing. All right, now watch this. If I go to edit the install.ins, and scroll down here, you see where the home page is set. This is just a text file. You can edit it by hand. The home page is bing.com. The reason it loaded the local server net is this INS file actually reset it on the fly, and I'll show you. If I say server 1 terra firma, we'll go ahead and save this and quit. Now watch, the first time I load Internet Explorer, anybody know what homepage I'll get? Bing. But at the same time, it's going out, checking that INS file, making all the changes invisibly to the user, and the second time I load this file, Terra Firma. So you can actually make these changes on the fly, and the next time I load Internet Explorer, it's actually going to be checking that INS file, making the changes, and so the next time I start it, I'll see those changes. Let's go ahead and make this change back, just to show you again. If I change it, I can make other changes here. I can change where the autoconfig URL is. I can change other things. But in this case, I'm just going to change the home page. We'll set this to msn.com. All right, the first time I load it, I get the old page. It goes out, it checks the INS file, makes those changes. The second time I load it, it's already implemented those changes. So you see, this is one way you can use to administer Internet Explorer 10. I saw 7 or 8 hands go up for folks who are using this functionality. Hopefully, these kind of demos are useful for you. All right, let's go back to the slides. All right, demos that actually work. That's good, right? Okay, is everybody awake? All right. All right, as I mentioned before, getting the IEAK, IEAK.microsoft.com. I wanted to include this in the slide and in the resources so that when you download the slides, you know it's a little bit easier for you to go to. Now let's talk about deploying IE10. There are really two different scenarios that you might fall into. One is you may have existing computers running Windows. Internet Explorer is a component of Windows. So you either have existing computers that are running Windows, or you have new computers that are running an upgrade. And you can incorporate Internet Explorer in either of those packages. You can either deploy it out to your existing machines, or you can include it as part of your Windows deployment. Now, let's Let's go through this in a little bit of detail. Switching back over to my demo machine. Technet.microsoft.com/IE will take you to the Internet Explorer TechNet page. And I wanted to take you here because we do have an Internet Explorer 10 deployment guide, which is a great, you know, useful tool when you're planning and executing your deployment. We won't talk about the compatibility toolkit, but during the app section, I will also talk about modern.ie. So I'll show you a demo of that and show you how to set it up and run it within your own intranet. But let's look at the deployment guide briefly, because I wanted to show you here. The basic idea is that since Internet Explorer is a part of Windows, you shouldn't have to use special management tools to deploy it. You should just use whatever you use today to deploy and manage software. That could be Microsoft solutions like System Center. It could be third-party solutions. You know, using the IEAK, you can create that customized package, and you can then deploy that MSI file out, you know, using whatever package you like. Or you look at the vanilla image for Internet Explorer 10, and you can use some silent switches to be able to deploy that. And when you go through here, there's a section on preparing for this, you know, customizing it using the IEAK. Essentially, it walks you through in a little less detail what I just showed you. Creating custom versions using INF files. And then deploying Internet Explorer 10. And this is where, if you choose to use third-party tools, there are some switches down here. So you see there are some command line options I wanted to point out to you, /passive/quiet, update no, no default, close programs. Some of these are also available within the IEAK, so some of the language may sound familiar. Passive, install without input, quiet, without showing the user interface as well. Those were options that were available to you within the IEAK as well. So you can use just about anything, but I do get questions. I had a question just this week from someone asking, how on earth do I install Internet Explorer 10 for Windows 7 machines using WSUS? And I thought, you know what, that would be a great demo. So I set this up last night in my hotel room. It took about 4.5 hours to download 100 megabytes, incidentally. So those of us who are streaming Netflix or, you know, Arrested Development, yeah. All right, I'm going to bounce over to my server now. All right, let's go ahead and log in there. And I'll go full screen just so it's not confusing. Now, the first thing that I was asked was, I don't see Internet Explorer 10 for Windows 7 in WSUS. And you won't by default currently, but you can very easily add it from the catalog. And that's what I did last night. And I wanted to show you how to do this, because it's relatively simple. If you go out to the Microsoft Update catalog, you can do a search and say, you know what, Internet Explorer 10. And maybe I should narrow that down and say Windows 7, but we should be able to find it pretty quickly. There it is. Internet Explorer 10 for Windows 7. Okay, that looks like the right thing. Let's go ahead and add that to our cart. And now I can view my basket here and choose to download. And not just download, but I can also tell it to install in WSUS. I'm just going to give it a sample location. All right, I don't need to wait for this to finish because I've already done it. But once you get done, you can import into WSUS. And at that point, it will show up in your WSS catalog. And in this case, I did download I downloaded updates for Windows and a few other products. Hopefully your WSS catalog doesn't look like this one does, where I haven't approved any updates for anything. But if you look for, you know, under Internet Explorer 10 for Windows 7, there it is, and we should be able to approve it now. And just to approve for install, there we go. Okay, done. So I wanted to show you that gotcha because apparently it's a little bit confusing for some folks. And we'll talk more about Internet Explorer 10 and App Compat in a minute, towards the end of the session. Now I can show you various deployment options. You know, there's for existing computers running Windows that you obviously have lots of different options. You can even use group policy, although we generally don't recommend it for managing computers. You can simply drop the file that you created using IEAK onto a share and let users update it themselves. You can, you know, push it out using any of your third-party management software. The bottom line there is we want to make it as easy as possible. There's no special way that you manage Internet Explorer or deploy Internet Explorer. You can use your existing deployment tools. That's why I wanted to show WSUS, but certainly you can use System Center, you can use you know, just about anything. The question is there any way to bundle the required patches and get past a reboot? And I think you're asking about Windows 7, is that right? Yeah. Mm-hmm. So the issue here is, and I'll explain why it's a good thing, because my background, I have some of a background in security, so it's a good thing from my standpoint. A lot of you might have wondered why Internet Explorer 10 for Windows 7 came out a little bit later than Internet Explorer 10 for Windows 8. And the fact is, we implemented some security mechanisms in IE 10, like force ASLR, force address space layout randomization, that basically takes a process and starts it at a different location, so that you know, heap spraying attacks find it much more difficult to find where that process is and insert their code there. Well, the good news is we did get the Windows engineering team to add some of that functionality into Windows 7. The bad news is it's now a requirement up front to install those patches before you install Internet Explorer 10 for Windows 7. It expects to already have the force ASLR functionality and some other patches installed. So the answer to your question is it might be a better practice to push out the patches, the required patches, which you can do individually, and then push out IE 10 for Windows 7. So once you've assured yourself that the patches, and you can actually make this a condition of deployment if you're using System Center, for example. You can say, on machines running Windows 7 with this patch, with this patch, with this patch, with this patch, then deploy this. Kind of come with what? I'm sorry? The question is it wise or unwise to deploy patches to machines that may never use that patch? I think the answer, unfortunately, you know, 15 years of consulting is it depends. if it were my environment and I were managing the devices separately, then I would be able to create, ideally create policies or create, a methodology that would deploy the patches to the machines that I intend to upgrade to IE10. And I might even have those in a separate, organizational unit. Let's talk about this offline. I'm happy to get you in touch with some folks who do this kind of thing every day and who live and breathe it, who actually use this in production environments. But it does sound like one of those things where I'd have to look at your environment and do a kind of a risk assessment.
Question.
Yes.
The Windows Update service, why doesn't it recognize when you have moved to a different version? Like if you go from IE9 to 10, after you reboot and you check for updates, it actually shows you updates for IE9 still. Why doesn't it recognize that you're no longer using that browser and just show you the ones for the current browser that you're using?
So you're saying for automatic updates?
Yeah.
Okay. I'm not sure about how the automatic updates function works, but I can hypothesize the answer. In Internet Explorer 10 on Windows 7, you think of IE10 on Windows 7 as a patch. Because you can actually uninstall Internet Explorer 10 from a Windows 7 environment and go back to 9. And I think at that point, and this is where I'm sticking my neck out and saying I don't work on the automatic updates team. I don't know what their rationale was. But I suspect that it's if someone chooses to downgrade from IE10 to IE9, we want to make sure that they're running IE9 with the latest patches, the latest security patches, the latest performance patches. Again, that's my hypothesis. You can come grab a business card, and I can reach out to that team and find out for sure.
The same sort of applies with the framework updates. If you go fresh from 7 to directly to 10, sometimes you have to do the framework in increments, so 3 to 3.5, SP1, and then you go to 4. So I'm just wondering, why doesn't it actually recognize your current browser and send you to the latest framework, just like with the other updates?
It should. The answer is, if you've installed IE10, it should recommend the latest patches as well. But it's also very easy, and this is another gotcha I should mention. If you're in an environment where you're trying to downgrade from IE10 to IE9 on Windows 7, you can't go into Windows functionality and deselect that box. Deselecting Internet Explorer 10 will take away Internet Explorer functionality from Windows 7 completely. The right way to uninstall or to downgrade from IE10 to IE9 is to go into installed patches and uninstall the IE10 patch. So exactly the patch that we just authorized within WSUS, you can uninstall that patch and go back to IE9. So that is a gotcha I wanted to mention to you. All right, let's go back to our slides. Internet Explorer deployment guidance. So if you're relatively early in your deployment, if you're still exploring, planning, testing, it may make sense to switch to deploying IE10 with Windows, whether that's Windows 7 or Windows 8. If, however, you're later in the cycle, if you're already deploying Windows 7, say, with Internet Explorer 9, I would suggest continuing to deploy Windows 7 with IE9 and in parallel start testing IE10. You may find that a lot of the remediation, steps that you took to make sure that your web apps were compatible with IE9 may translate to IE10. All right, let's cover browser management now. So as I mentioned before, Internet Explorer has about 1,500 group policies. These are group policies for all kinds of versions of IE. We added a lot of group policies around IE8 timeframe, but we've continued to update that and add policies for IE9 and IE10 as well. A lot of people ask me, how should I think about this? That's a lot of policies. Do I really need to drill in and find out what every single policy does? And this is the way I try to answer. Microsoft created in Internet Explorer a program that's highly configurable. I don't really think of this as customizable in terms of, you know, back when I was supporting Unix and Linux systems, customizable to me meant going into the device driver and making tweaks and recompiling. You know, customizable to me means having access to the source code. But in this case, what we've done is we've taken a browser that's, you know, a fairly complex piece of software, and we've put in lots and lots and lots and lots of hooks to make it very, very configurable. The reason we've done this is, at the end of the day, you can configure Internet Explorer for a wide, wide variety of customer needs, and at the end of the day, it's still supported. So Microsoft is standing behind these configurations, these edits, these changes. And we want to make sure that lowest common denominator, that by default, it's going to be, you know, safe by default. It's going to be private by default. And then on top of that, for specific needs, you may want to choose to lock your users out of certain functionality. We've made it very, very easy for you to do that. Now, obviously, you can create your own templates that, you know, address a set of group policies all at once. I've worked with various defense departments, who have a spreadsheet, you know, that they've of group policies that they've chosen to implement in certain ways. Or you can just do this piecemeal. You can say, you know what, this is the specific functionality that we want to block out. So that's the approach that we're going to take. You know, security in general is always a balance between risk and functionality. So the more functionality you take out, the less risk there is, but, you know, at some point your users may start to complain about that. So there's always a balance there. There are 28 new group policies for IE10. I'll cover a few of those in a minute. Yes, there was a hand, I think. Yeah. That's a good point. The point is made, the only way to configure IE10 in a Windows 7 environment is with Windows 8 or Server 2012, obviously. There are administrative templates available. I downloaded them this afternoon. I haven't tried applying those in an in a Windows 7 environment. Yeah, if you're running a Windows 7 environment, it may be useful just even to set up a virtual machine running Windows 8 for configuration reasons, or server. Okay. All right, and then the point I made earlier on policy versus preference. IEAK for setting preferences, group policies for setting policy. And let's switch over to demo now. Okay, I'm going to go full screen with my Windows 8 client. And let's look at a couple things. How many of you used the GP search tool? GP search? Okay, just a few people, so it's probably worth mentioning. GPsearch.azurewebsites.net. It's a wonderful tool for being able to find a specific group policy. So if you look here, I can filter out everything except Internet Explorer 10. And then I can do a search. And you'll find that the search includes the description, so the search can be pretty liberal. If I search, for example, for general settings, it's doing its thing. There we go. Okay, lots of policies here, but the one it highlighted is the one I was actually looking for. Disable the general page. If you notice here, I can go into Internet Options, and I've got lots of different settings here. I've got General, Security, Privacy, Content, Connections, Programs, Advanced. I can actually block users from accessing any of these tabs, as well as some of the items within the tab. So I can set by group policy just about everything that you see in front of you. By blocking out the general tab, I will effectively be putting into place a policy that covers everything on that particular tab. So it's a bit redundant in that sense. And that's the explanation on the right-hand side of the screen goes into some detail there. But let's go ahead and set this, and I'll show you how easy it is. So now that I've found the policy I want, obviously there's a user policy and a computer policy, and I can choose to set either one depending on my needs. In this case, I'm going to go ahead and start gpedit. All right, and I'm going to browse down into, and I can follow along here. It's basically computer configuration, administrative templates, Windows components, Internet Explorer, Internet Control Panel. And I can dive down there. So let's do it under user. Windows components, Internet Explorer, Internet Control Panel. There it is. And here's disable the general page. I can go ahead and enable that one. Okay, that's enabled. Now I'm going to go ahead and run a command prompt. I'll do a gpedit/force or gpupdate/force. Okay, I may need to log out, but let's go ahead and try our luck. I think I may have to log out to see the change, but let's see. No, it's gone. So this is, you know, there are lots and lots of group policies out there, but I wanted to show you how you can enable one to show you that it's not really that difficult to enable these things. You can create organizational units, you know, for certain users or certain groups, certain locations, and choose to put group policies in place for those machines or those users, depending on your needs. Lots of different ways to slice and dice this. All right, let's switch back. All right, app compat. We're going to be spending a good amount of time here because there are some complexities here. And as I mentioned when I started the session, this is really app compat for IT pros. So we're not going to be cracking code. We're not going to be making changes to a website. I'm assuming that you're in a position where you may be able to ask your developers to make changes to internal websites. So we have some tools that I wanted to show you for that. But you may not be in a position to dictate to third parties. Or you may even have some web applications that are legacy apps that you have to support. The person left 5 years ago or 10 years ago who actually originally created those web apps. I know I've been in those situations myself. So I wanted to show you some tools and some tips and tricks around application compatibility. One is compatibility view. This is the easiest thing for users to do on their own. It's also a little bit confusing, so I wanted to explain it. By clicking on that broken page icon at the top of the browser, it will render that particular page in IE7 standards mode. Now, there's some good and bad about this, and I wanted to explain both of it. For IE10, we've made some significant improvements in speed. For IE9, we completely rewrote the JavaScript engine, so it was much, much faster than IE8. For IE10, we've continued to make improvements there. If you look side by side, I said this wasn't a marketing thing, but I think this is relevant because it can help you troubleshoot. If you look side by side at, say, Chrome, Firefox, Internet Explorer, the latest versions running in the latest standards mode, for many functions, they're just a few milliseconds apart. I think it was New Relic or Strange Loop that did a test, and Firefox and Internet Explorer were 3 milliseconds apart on page load times, average page load times. So there's very, very little difference for some of these functions. But here's the gotcha, and this is why this is relevant. If you're running in IE7 compatibility mode, you will see a performance hit. You will see a pretty significant performance hit. I've talked to customers on the phone who have said, okay, I know you say that IE10 is fast, but I'm running it side by side with another browser, and I have to say it's really, really slow. At that point, I say, okay, what mode are you running in? We hit a couple of buttons, and they say, oh, I'm running in IE7 compatibility mode. Okay, that's probably why. IE7 compatibility mode is great for compatibility reasons, but there's a trade-off in terms of performance. When you add a page to IE7 compatibility mode, it will populate this list here. But there's also a way you can do it through group policy. And I'll show you that a little bit later as well, the specific group policy that you would use. Now, there's a list that Microsoft maintains called the Compatibility View List. This is there's a separate one for IE10 and a different one for IE9. This is basically an XML list that contains a whole host of public-facing websites and the specific mode that those websites run best in. Developers sometimes reach out to us proactively and say, yeah, we're in the process of updating our site, but it still runs best in IE8 mode, or it still runs best in IE9 mode. Can you please explicitly add our site to your list? So sometimes we get sites for the list that way. Sometimes we get them through crowdsourcing. People will call Microsoft support and say, hey, my favorite site doesn't run in your browser. And we figure out, oh, it's really designed for IE8 or IE9 or IE7. And then we will proactively reach out to that website owner and say, do you mind if we create an entry here specifically for your website? The way I think developers think about this generally is this is a good temporary workaround. We don't want Microsoft to explicitly claim what compatibility mode your site should run in perpetuity. That can cause problems as well. Recently, a customer reached out to us and said, hey, we realized we're in your compatibility view list. For IE8 compatibility mode, we've actually upgraded since then. Can you please either remove us or explicitly set us for IE10 because we're on great in standards mode now? And that I think is the ideal outcome. Take them off the list or set them on a modern browser. Now, the pro tip here, to get to this particular dialog box is a little confusing in IE10. But if you press F10, you can simply grab it off the tools menu. The other thing I wanted to mention here is display intranet sites in compatibility view. That is checked by default. So by default, from looking at our customers and talking with lots of customers, most internal intranet websites and web apps tend to work best with IE7 compatibility mode now. At some point, that switch will flip. At some point, it will make sense for us to default and say, you know what? Most people have upgraded their web apps. Let's go ahead and have the defaults taken off. But today, the default is to set internal web apps in IE7 mode. You can obviously set this either through IEAK or through group policy. You can choose to set this yourself. Does that only affect the desktop? No. Short answer. There are a number of group policies and settings that affect both the immersive browsing experience in Windows 8 and the desktop browsing experience. And compatibility mode is one of them. The compatibility view list does apply to both. But the only way you can actually, if I back up a screen, the only way you can edit this is through this particular dialog box is only available on the desktop. But the settings here do apply to desktop and immersive browser both. Yes, question. There is a way. The question is there a way of downloading that XML file to my local machine instead of having the machines go out and update it on their own? It's not supported. I'd like to clarify that. But we used this XML CVL list, the compatibility view list, for our Flash list. You know that in March, we flipped from being a blacklist, or I'm sorry, we flipped from being a whitelist of sites that we would allow to run Flash to being a blacklist of sites that we don't permit to allow to run Flash within the immersive environment. And the CVL, the compatibility view list, is actually used for that functionality. Some folks figured out a hack to be able to download the XML file, host it locally, make changes to that themselves, and have Internet Explorer reference the cached version instead. Unsupported method, but it is, you know, it is technically feasible. It is technically possible. All right, and then the last tool I wanted to mention before we dive into a demo is the F12 developer tools. Now, don't be fooled. I tend to think of this as a misnomer because I'm not a developer, but I love these tools, and I think there's more than just this that can be useful. It also has some packet tracing capabilities or packet capturing capabilities, kind of like Fiddler, although I still use Fiddler quite a bit. Two things I wanted to bring to your attention here. One is browser mode. Browser mode is the user agent string that's actually sent to the server. Now, there are some older websites that actually explicitly send different content depending on what browser they think they're talking to. If they think they're talking to IE7, oh, here's some code for that IE7. If they think they're talking to IE8, oh, here's different code for IE8. So sending a different user agent string is the browser's way of essentially lying to the website and saying, oh, I'm running IE7 or I'm running IE8. And you may be surprised, you know, some, like I said, some older websites, not a best practice, but you may get some custom content specifically for that browser. More useful generally for troubleshooting purposes is this document mode. Document mode is how the browser is interpreting that page. And so for troubleshooting, we can try different document modes and see what the website exhibits, what kind of behavior the website exhibits. Let's go ahead and try this. So I'm switching back over to my demo machine. And let's pull up websites. All right, this is a third-party website. I have no association with them, but I did write them and, you know, got permission to show you this. You notice in IE10, the menus don't quite work. And I think there are a lot of legacy applications, legacy websites that are in the same boat. Now, if I hit F12, you'll see these F12 developer tools come up. Right now, by default, it's running in standards mode, which means the site is thinks that it can run in modern standards. Let's go ahead and try some different modes here. If I try IE9, the drop-down menus seem to work pretty well. If I try IE8, the drop-down menus seem to work. Okay, now let's try our compatibility view mode, IE7, because if it runs in IE7 standards mode, we're good to go. Oh, menus don't quite line up like they should. So this is an example of a website that may not run in IE7 mode, which we can very easily add it to our compatibility view. We even have group policies that can handle that for us. So, you know, now that we know that it can run, and let's try Quirks mode as well. There is a group policy for Quirks mode. Quirks mode, unfortunately, runs for IE5 and IE6, and this is even worse. So, yeah, that's not going to work so well. IE8 mode, IE9 mode seem to work fine. So I think those are some good modes to try to use for this particular application. Now, the reason I show you this is the F12 developer tools are great for troubleshooting. They're great for figuring out what mode, what document mode, what can I send to the website that will actually work, and what, you know, how should I interpret the website that will work. Once you've figured out what mode you can use, then you have some options. And I wanted to lay out what those options were. So let's go back to the slides, and I'll show you that. Again, no affiliation with that site. I just wanted to be able to show you F12 developer tools with the site. The way I find these sites, incidentally, is there are a lot of sites that still say work best with IE7 or works best with IE6 or works best with IE5. And we are actively reaching out to some of those top websites to make sure that they have a plan in place to upgrade to modern standards. I mentioned briefly there are a couple of group policies. There is one for quirks mode in particular. There's one for IE7. They're the last two that are right over my head here. So you can explicitly set either an intranet site or an extranet site, a website, a public-facing website, and you know apply this policy. This might be useful if you're using, for example, a third-party web app that's hosted by the vendor. You can explicitly tell it to run in IE7 or in quirks mode. You can also, I mentioned the Internet Explorer standards mode for local internet. Go ahead. No, I'm sorry. Those group policies are lists of websites. Yeah, the question was, is there a way of getting more granular? Sorry, I didn't mean to misdescribe these. Each one of these group policies actually lets you create a list of specific websites. Those could be intranet sites. Those could be extranet sites. But you create a list. You can use a whole URL. You can also apply these group policies at a variety of levels. You can apply them at an organizational unit level or you know, company-wide, depending on how you choose to manage your group policies. All right, so I mentioned kind of an algorithm here. My suggestion would be, and again, this is from an IT pro standpoint, there's another session covering app compat from a developer standpoint, and that's how you actually fix the applications. I think that's pretty critical. But as a temporary workaround, we IT pros know we still have to make sure the website actually works. So the suggestion here is troubleshoot it using Compatibility View, using your F12 developer tools, figure out what modes actually work. Sometimes we luck out. I've been on the phone before with a customer who says, yeah, your performance is really slow on Internet Explorer 10. I say, okay, great. Press F12. What is the document mode? They say, oh, document mode is IE7. Okay, oh, let's try standards. Okay, standards mode, the page refreshes itself. Oh, everything works perfectly and it's a lot faster. Thank you very much. Click. You know, that's a great conversation to have. It doesn't always turn out that way. But there are some websites that do run fine on IE9 or IE10 standards mode, and it's just that way back when they were set in one way or another, they were set to an older IE7 compatibility mode. Now, once you know which mode works, then you're in a position to figure out what tools do I have at my disposal to be able to set that mode explicitly. You can use Compatibility View, again, on by default for intranet sites. You can use the group policies, but again, those are only for IE7 and quirks mode. There's one I didn't mention because it's cheating a little bit, but it's minimal. You can add a meta tag to the site that's an XUA compatible tag. The XUA compatible tag is a way of explicitly, the site tells the browser explicitly what compatibility mode to use. So again, it's cheating a little bit because it's cracking the code. But even I can use Notepad. Even I can go into a legacy site and maybe able to make a change to the header. So that's not too bad. And as a best practice, I've been told by several audience members from doing these sessions at MMS and other places that they're suggesting to their developers that their developers, as they go through their web apps and upgrade them for modern standards, that they actually use the XUA compatible meta tag for IE10. So that 6 years from now, they help solve this problem for future generations of browsers. And finally, the compatibility view list for public sites. The CVL list is a great mechanism for public sites. We do need to get the site owner's permission, but there may be cases where you're working, as I said before, with a third-party app or another public-facing website that you really need to run in a particular mode. And I've got lots of emails from folks who say, hey, can you please reach out to xyz.com or whoever and tell them their site works best in IE8 because that's what we need to set it to. So we're happy to help you have that conversation. Ideally, though, all of these are temporary workarounds, and the best thing long-term is updating the site to be compatible with modern standards. It's a standard for development now to write to modern standards. Ideally, a website should simply work across all versions. It should work across Internet Explorer. It should work for Firefox, for Chrome. And if they adhere to modern standards, it should just work. Actually, it looks like we have a few minutes left, so I do want to show you one other thing, and that's modern.ie. This is a great site that you can recommend to your developers. So let me go ahead and pull that one up. Modern.ie is basically a set of tools that you can use to test a site. And it tests it in three ways. It tests it for backward compatibility with older versions of Internet Explorer. It tests it for modern standards to make sure that it works across browsers and across devices. Because ideally, as I said before, developers should be writing one set of code that works on your iPads, your Windows tablets, any browser, as long as it adheres to modern standards. And the last thing it tests is a couple of Windows 8 features. For example, if you pin a tile, will the tile have a high-res logo for that site? So just some low-hanging fruit that those developers can do. Now, if I look here, I think I left myself in IE8 standards mode. That's a little bit better. All right, so I can enter in a URL here. And of course, the first time I saw this particular tool, the question I had was, wow, that's great. How soon can you make a version available for download? Because I want to test my internal web apps for compatibility. I don't just want to test public-facing websites. The developer team said, yep, we'll get working on that. And they created a local environment that you can simply download here. And I wanted to show you how easy this is to set up. I won't take your time to do the setup. I've already done it. But it's simply downloading a zip file. The zip file has a README in it, one page. And the README is pretty simple. You install a couple of files. Now I'm going to show you actually that it works. I'm going to run this. And we have to start this service. So you can run this on one machine on your corporate intranet and then make it available to other machines to be able to hit that port and test their own applications. So you as an IT pro can easily set up this testing environment for your developers, and then they can actually do the testing. In this case, we're going to run this. The instructions say node-lib-service.js. Oh, sorry, I've got to switch directories. Okay, now let's try it again. Good. All right, now if I go to localhost and that particular port number, you can set it to whatever port you want. In this case, it's 1337, which I thought was pretty funny. Leet, right? All right, so I have that intranet website that I set up, and I set it up explicitly for this demo. Server 1... Terra Firma. This is an intranet website. You know, it could be a web app, let's say. And I want to check it and see if it's compliant with modern standards. So I'm just going to take this URL, copy, paste, and scan. Now, it will do the scan on the fly, but it does submit it up to the server for the formatting and for the report formatting. I can see exactly what it's going to submit to the server and make sure there's no personally identifiable information here. So I make sure that I'm not uploading anything anywhere across the internet that might compromise the security of my network. That's kind of paramount. But you see that each one of these tests, CV list, true, passed true means it passed the test, passed false obviously means it didn't pass the test. Let's go ahead and create the report. So it's submitting that data up to modern.ie. And now I can download, or I can scroll down here. Fix common problems from supporting older versions. Not a problem. This template was actually written for IE7, I think. Help this web page work well across browsers and devices. There is a problem with responsive web design. It looks like the breakpoints on the page aren't set exactly right for some modern devices. So we want to be able to handle that properly. And then being able to identify touch first browsing, folks who are using touch, and setting a start screen tile. So there's some easy guidance around what they can do around there too. So I wanted to show you that demo to show you that modern.ie is a great tool, not just for your extranet sites, but also for helping to troubleshoot your intranet sites. And it's really easy for you to set up you know, as an additional service for your developers to be able to use that internally. It does go through just that one page. I believe we have a crawler internally that we use on some sites, so you can request us to do a crawl on a public-facing site. But this particular tool just scans the one page. Good question. Thank you. All right, so in summary, we covered a lot of information, but we are out of time. And I promised to finish on time. I think we're right about there, 4:30 p.m. So we covered customizing the browser, deploying IE10, browser management, and app compat. I'm happy to stay late and answer questions, but please come on down. And please do download the deck. You know, there's lots of resources in here. Thanks again very much for your time. Thanks.